FM, Lafayette Lake Charles, streaming online at krvs.org.
Hi, friends. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Welcome to Bayou to Beltway. Today, we are joined by two distinguished professors at UL Lafayette to talk about a group, a working group, recently started called Black Study Within and Beyond Crisis. We are welcoming Assistant Professor Maria Sager from the English Department. She's been around since 2017 at UL after getting a PhD from the University of Connecticut. She's an assistant professor in English. She focuses on 19th century and black literature and culture. She is an author and has a book coming out shortly called Reading Confederate Monuments. We're also joined by Dr. Theo Foster, who matriculated from in Black Studies from Northwestern, which is in Evanston, Illinois, Northwestern University. He's an assistant professor of African-American history at U.S., and he has a title coming out, The Fire Hose Next Time, Civil Rights Memory, Neoliberalism, and Black Politics. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so
Happy
much.
Happy to be here.
A pleasure
Good
to
morning.
Be here.
You have collectively, between you at least, started a speaker series in a working group, and it's titled Black Study Within and Beyond Crisis. And you've been starting to meet weekly. You began, I believe, in February, and this is continuing through April. So I'm curious, what was the catalyst for this series? And tell us about the crisis that you're addressing.
Excellent. So I'll go first, and then I look forward to Professor Sager building upon some introductory remarks. But I guess you could say that the thinking for this opportunity for UL students, staff, and faculty, began long before we came here in terms of our research. As well as our training within the university and thinking about its relationship to, the world, the communities in which our universities, are housed and contribute, and how we can do a better job of meeting the kind of demands that the communities put upon us as educators, as scholars, as researchers, right, and really being in deep kind of collaboration with them. So, the title of this series is Black Study Within and Beyond Crisis. And I think for me, the title really is at once obvious and I think also speaks to a deeper kind of concern of what we mean by crisis and what that language affords us for thinking about problems that are, again, obvious in terms of the pandemic, COVID-19. We're running up on a year kind of anniversary of that. The crisis that was produced with our institution in terms of students, and an unprecedented number from what I can understand. I came to UL in fall 2019, but from what I understand, the uprisings throughout this past summer in 2020, in the wake of the viral video of George Floyd being murdered by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, generated a kind of groundswell of demands, not just for police accountability or calls to defund in order to abolish the police, but also a broader understanding of ongoing systemic racism and racial injustice, right? So as someone who has 3 degrees in the field, the interdisciplinary field of Black studies, I recognize that my ability to earn those degrees is the result of the sacrifice of students at your alma mater in San Francisco State University in 1969, as well as a range of other universities across the nation. Not many in the South, and we can talk about this a bit later, right? The development of Black studies as an institutionalized field of academic inquiry really began in 69. But the title of this lecture is Black Study Within and Beyond Crisis, to speak to some of the intellectual commitments, political paradigms and praxis that existed prior to this moment in the 60s, right? Black folk have been organizing around concepts such as freedom, equality, and liberation well beyond the university finally recognizing that, there's a lot that Black studies has to offer to all of the traditional disciplines from history to political science, English, and I would argue certainly in 2021, the STEM fields, which we often don't think about as intersecting with Black studies, sometimes Black people or Blackness, but from medicine to engineering, there certainly are a lot of really important intersections. So, yeah, I would say this past summer really put a thought in my mind that, we should have space for students and faculty and staff not only to listen and hear from emerging Black Studies scholars. We have 6 scholars who we're bringing virtually to campus, 5 of whom are recent grads in the past, 6 or 7 years, their PhD. So their research really is, in many ways, cutting edge. But we wanted to provide a working group where we can actually read these scholars, academic publications, and engage in a deeper kind of intellectual community around the work of Black Studies beyond just hearing a speaker on one day, because indeed the work of Black Studies is an ongoing kind of project. So I'll shut up there and listen a bit to Professor Seeger's kind of, interest in this project. And I would say that while we've expanded this to 6 speakers, Dr. Seeger approached me, I think, in December with an interest in bringing 1 or 2 speakers. So perhaps she could speak a bit about that, and then I, can continue afterwards.
Okay, Dr. Yeah. Seeger.
Thank you so much. In the English department, we were really energized by the students' activism across campus over the summer in the midst of the pandemic in response to George Floyd's murder. They organized across campus to make demands of Lafayette and of the university, completely reasonable demands of Lafayette and the university for, Black Lives Matter and racial equity, and a greater attention and focus to Blackness in the curriculum, which they weren't seeing. And the English department, in response to these protests, put together a letter asking the dean and the president for increased resources for Black Studies curriculum and for hiring in the area of Black Studies and for making our classrooms and our campus a more equitable place. And so as part of that letter, one of the demands that was conceded to was agreeing to fund a Black Studies speaker for the academic year. And so the committee that I'm in charge of was tasked with that charge. And we wanted to bring a couple of speakers and tried to think creatively about how we could stretch the funding that we had been given. And I approached Theo and he said, let's do more. Let's bring more than 2 speakers, and creatively found funding from the Gilbo Charitable Trust to expand the series from maybe 2 speakers to 6 speakers, and to supplement it with a working group, which really I think is fundamental to thinking about these events not as one-off experiences, but rather as a way to build a community and a collective groundswell of Black Studies knowledge and investigation among students, staff, and faculty on campus that might further organize for the institutionalization of, and I mean that in a with a positive connotation rather than a negative one, of Black Study at UL. So we're really, really pleased to have such brilliant speakers sharing with our students and our colleagues, but also to be able to give thought and care to their work in a small communal space where we're, you know, where we're approaching this inquiry together outside of the formal structures of the university classroom.
Well, that's one of the things that I wanted to follow up with. So this is a kind of an extracurricular measure, because perhaps the curriculum of UL Lafayette, regular curriculum, didn't comfortably house this sort of a study. Is that something that a more institutional component like a Black Studies department might do, might, you know, be have the classes in place and the groups together to actually address issues like this and so on? And is it a lack of that sort of institutional structure that leads to this you know, ad hoc effort to do this?
Professor Seeger, do you want to go? I can go afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, I think in terms of we're understaffed as it relates to Black Studies teaching and curriculum at UL. And we've sort of been chronically understaffed, I think, across the history of UL, as far as I can tell. And so we can't offer the number of courses to keep up with student demand. And we have a Black and African Diaspora Studies minor that tends to be relatively under-enrolled because of the patchwork of courses that satisfy it, because we do not have a formal department of Black Studies or even a Black Studies program. Courses are offered across quote-unquote traditional departments and disciplines, which often means that the organization of the minor falls through the cracks. Institutionally, there's very little, it tends to change hands. The responsibility for it tends to change hands. And so there's a lack of kind of institutional knowledge and history for how the minor should be administered. And it takes a lot more effort to make the minor a cohesive program of study. But I think Theo and I are both invested in hiring around this particular Black Studies field and approach, and doing everything we can to, in the meantime, get our students the knowledge, the approaches, the exposure to Black Studies readings and speakers that they deserve. And so this speaker series is really a supplement, a sort of stopgap measure for the curriculum that they so much deserve and that we're not currently offering them.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's really
Dr.
helpful.
Foster.
I think, yeah, you know, when I was a graduate student at Northwestern, I was really excited to enter in 2013 to a space that grad students, faculty had organized around another subject, even though we had at Northwestern, you know, a Department of African American Studies with 15 or so tenured faculty in sociology, history, literature, political science, political theory. There was really only one scholar who did work in Afro-Latin America. So there was an Afro-Latino working group. And at that time, my research really was looking at the history and politics of Black Ecuador and Afro-Ecuadorian experiences. My research has since shifted to considering the politics of civil rights memory, not just in the U.S. South, but as a kind of global symbolic area in which people draw upon, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. and Selma and Birmingham to make arguments about diversity, freedom, racism. But this working group was a really generative space for, you know, afternoons to have, you know, some food, invite speakers from across the country, read their work, and engage with them one-on-one. Or one on, you know, 10, whoever would show up for that project. So I thought about bringing that model to UL as well, because it really built a kind of important intellectual and research community that is necessary, especially for that specific, project, Afro-Latino, thinking about the intersection of Latinidad and Blackness. But at UL, and really across the country, there's a historic kind of dismissal of Black studies as a rigorous academic discipline. And it's easy to dismiss, in part because of anti-Blackness and racism, that folk with no kind of knowledge whatsoever in the field can so easily attack and dismiss the field, produces a kind of defensiveness on the part of scholars and departments to really defend, the work of Black studies. And rather than, simply defend and prove it as legitimate, I thought that, this collective effort might lead toward a kind of recognition of how much Black studies can sharpen any kind of question, research, teaching, again, in whatever traditional discipline. In part because within the field, Blackness is taken as a critical category of analysis and not simply an identity, right? So I always tell my students, Black studies is not simply the study of Black people, right? Because certainly political scientists, historians study Black communities, politics, histories, right? It's this added component that's really rooted in this kind of rupture in the university that came about in 1969 that resulted in the kind of formation of Black studies departments and programs that didn't take place at UL at that time, right? So, again, after this past summer's uprisings in which students were demanding, yes, more content about Black life, culture, politics, history, but also Black spaces, right, to discuss these issues, Black faculty to facilitate these issues, which isn't to say that all Black faculty do Black studies, right? That's another kind of historic misnomer that does actually undercut the legitimacy of the field. But folks trained in and or committed to doing the reading, like someone like Dr. Seeger, who earned her PhD in English and yet has, over the course of her grad career and junior faculty at status at UL, really, filled in some gaps in the curricula here at UL. So I'm happy to collaborate with her on that basis.
Well, let me pose a question. And by the way, we're talking today with Dr. Theodore Foster and Dr. Maria Sager about a group that they put together, Black Study Within and Beyond Crisis, that's meeting weekly. And we're talking about the origination of that group and how what it's all about and how it's working. It seems like back in 1969, of course, the riots of 67, the civil rights movement, from 55 through 65, a lot of people are talking about the Voting Rights Act. It seems like there was a wave of consciousness about Black studies and about the need for Black studies. And that wave, I don't think ever hit Louisiana or Louisiana universities very much, or Southern universities, frankly. It kind of did produce, as you pointed out, Black studies departments around and elsewhere around the country. And I think most people would have said, prior to maybe last summer and everything that came down, would have said, well, it's a field that maybe doesn't have so much of an important focus now. It's more of a history of what was. But I think, as you point out, George Floyd and Trayford Pellerin and every other incident all this summer and beyond brought it to people's attention that, race is a significant issue in this country. Being Black in this country is significant. There is systemic racism. And, it was kind of a second wave of consciousness raising across the country. So, and that is in part, I think, what's driving your group right now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, very much so. I would say that the kind of foundation laid from 2011, 2012, after the murder of Trayvon Martin, we witnessed the rise of kind of movement for Black lives that is often misrepresented as the Black Lives Matter movement, right? Having been an adjunct professor at the time and a graduate student, I can say that there are a number of organizations run by young Black people who are responding to, under the first Black president, the ongoing specter of racial injustice, that the law does not serve Black communities and Black people in the same way as it serves others. So from that kind of originary event, Trayvon Martin, and also for me, the state execution of Troy Davis in Georgia, for those of us who sort of forgot about that moment, it was a really traumatic experience with the inadequacies of the court that provided a stay of execution. The Supreme Court did for Troy Davis in 2012. And it was like a last minute stay, right? So it's the drama of knowing someone who is likely innocent by all accounts, but the law had adjudicated him the murderer of a police officer in Georgia in the 1990s. To have a stay of state-sanctioned murder, and that relief and feeling like, oh, wow, the court came through, and then just 12 hours later, that stay was lifted and he was killed. It's that kind of trauma that I think young Black folk have been really experiencing the history of this nation and, the history of slavery and colonialism. But, again, as a scholar of the civil rights movement and the ways in which memories of it resonate, it's especially devastating when you teach young people about, the work of so many during the 1960s, those we know and those we don't know, and the kind of legal battles that were won, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Brown v. Board of Education and 1954, all these legal victories seemingly did not produce the progress that I was raised on in the 90s and early 2000s, right, that was celebrated and championed in a city like Birmingham. So I think, this past summer's uprisings reflect the uprisings of 1967. And I would, reject the language of riot, as I think that it, I know that as a scholar, it has a kind of criminalizing language to say that a riot is legally disorder and we need what in response to it? More policing and law and order, right? The rhetoric of law and order is directly tied to how we see Black folk in communities that have been defunded, forgotten, and dismissed to, cry foul about a Target or a CVS being burned down, and indifferent to the cries of these communities that never stop. I think, these movements, uprisings, rather, really speak to the urgency of a crisis that has never left, right? So I think one thing Black Studies offers us is a new grammar, a new language that we need in this moment. There's an inadequate understanding of the experiences of Black people and analyses of it. And I want to briefly turn to one of the readings that we are engaging in later today. It's by Black woman historian Darlene Clark Hine, who really in many ways founded Black women's history. If you go back to the 1950s and 60s, academia did not teach about Black women in the ways in which we talk about Black people today. Black women were not seen as historical actors worthy of research or investigation. And Darlene Clark Hine's kind of institution building in Black women's history really began in the 1970s with two graduate students pressing her to, show us where we can do the kind of research on Black women, because it was woefully lacking. But Darlene Clark Hine, wrote this really excellent short essay called A Black Studies Manifesto, Characteristics of a Black Studies Mind, that is really short but really helpful in really delineating what is the work of Black studies and what makes it distinct. She writes that though African American studies is a younger field of study, that many of the traditional disciplines, such as history or sociology, and is very, though African American studies is a younger field of study, that many of the traditional disciplines, such as history or sociology, and is very frequently practiced under the umbrella of these conventional departments, we often forget that Black studies is an intellectual discipline characterized by different objects and methods of study than other disciplinary formations in the university. Coming from three decades of tenure in history departments, I knew that a singular characteristic of the historical mind was the embrace of the concept of change over time. My longstanding research interest in the history of Black lawyers makes clear the habits of a legal mind. Or, put another way, within 10 minutes of talking to a person, it is rather easy to determine whether he or she is a lawyer by the way they articulate critical issues. Though law schools do not teach or require students to learn or memorize every law that has been passed, students do, however, learn how to think like lawyers. So how do we characterize thinking like scholars and teachers of Black studies? What is it that we teach, mean, think about, develop, research, aspire to convey when we call ourselves Black studies professors, graduate students, undergraduate majors, writers, and editors, and are called so by others? And she points to five key concepts: intersectionality, nonlinear thinking, diasporic perspectives, oppression and resistance, and solidarity. So these are some of the ways in which we hope to engage the broader UL community in this field through these scholars and through these readings.
Maria? Dr. Sager?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you read that passage. It really, I think, it hammers home the point that Black studies habits of mind are really beneficial for any person in the community and any major at the university. And I think the demand for Black studies curriculum in this particular moment on behalf of our students is a response to the uprisings that Dr. Foster was just pointing to. And I'm glad that we've come to this moment that feels like crisis, but also it feels like opportunity to think about the relationship between the work that we do in the classroom and what's happening in our broader community. And I'm glad that students are also thinking about the applicability of their classroom work learning and the kinds of learning that they're doing in this working group and speaker series.
Well, it's never been so plain that African Americans in American society really face struggles that many people thought were over, are certainly so vastly reduced as to almost not be mentioned. But of course, the events, you know, since the last 10 years have really brought into focus that there's this huge need for a refocus. And I certainly thank you and Dr. Foster and Dr. Sager for refocusing our community, hopefully, and certainly on these incredible issues, and also the students and the faculty at UL Lafayette. Do you think we have 20 seconds left? Do you think UL will move to get a Black Studies department together, or is it hard to say?
It's always going to be hard to say, and I think it depends upon student demand and student contribution to this discussion. The top-down approach often results in a really ineffective program or Department of Black Studies. I am pleased to have seen our sister school and LSU down the road have our sister school and LSU down the road has at least in name claimed to have created a Black Studies department, right? So I think there is a broader kind of movement, not only for faculty who do this work, but also a space to house them, a space to tenure them, and a space for, you know, students to engage in this really urgent inquiry.
Okay.
So I'm optimistic.
Excellent. Well, we're going to have to cut off there, but we've been talking today to Dr. Theodore Foster, Dr. Maria Sager about their series Black Study Within and Beyond Crisis. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette.